supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
False accounts of mass checkpoints are making the rounds amid reports that federal immigration law enforcement is expanding. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports that U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement representatives say the spread of these reports in the Philadelphia region is, quote, dangerous and irresponsible.
Social media provides fertile ground for all kinds of unverified claims to take root. Reports of a checkpoint at the intersection of Route 1 and 202 in southern Delaware County have been recurring, zombie-like, on Facebook for the last several weeks.
Where would they even stop anyone? It is a four-way with tons of traffic.
That's Elisa Jones with La Comunidad Hispana in Kennett Square. She's tried repeatedly to verify the checkpoint. ICE says it isn't using checkpoints, and these reports are, quote, false. Peter Pedamonte, director of the immigration advocacy group, the New Sanctuary Movement, says concerned Philadelphia residents are also calling in false alarms to a hotline set up to report raids.
One week we had like three different calls of checkpoints, and like we were like very concerned.
Again, staff went to the alleged locations and found nothing. A local ICE spokesman says spreading bogus information about enforcement creates, quote, mass panic and puts communities and law enforcement personnel in unnecessary danger, unquote. Immigration enforcement is expanding in the U.S., so false reports play on real fears, says Jones.
I think that people are, in some cases, not carrying on their day-to-day activities, which may include going to work. It may include sending kids to school. That is having a negative impact.
Here's what ICE enforcement does look like. Agents go to a discrete location with a warrant looking for a specific person. ICE says anyone who's approached by someone claiming to be a federal immigration officer should ask to see a badge and credentials. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
Work halted yesterday afternoon at a construction site in Philadelphia's Old City section when historic human remains were found underground. A team of professionals quickly were summoned to assess the findings for historical value before transporting them to their final resting place. Kimberly Moran is an associate teaching professor and director of Forensic Center at Rutgers Camden. I met her outside the worksite, where she and her group of undergrads are gaining a unique hands-on experience. Professor Moran, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks for coming out.
We are, of course, at the site of once was the First Baptist Church burial ground established in 1707. When did you or others first become aware that this burial site still had bodies?
We became aware that there were still bodies probably about February the 20th. Originally, we read an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer of how the construction company started to find some unassociated bones, and we thought our project was just going to involve working with that one initial box. Then they started to find more, and they didn't really know who to turn to. So they reached out to us, and we came on site, and then shortly thereafter, we started finding intact coffins.
How many at this point?
As of yesterday, just the work that we did from 7 a.m. to about 6 p.m. yesterday, we were up to 38.
And is that likely near the total, or you have no sense yet what you're going to find?
We really don't. Every day is full of surprises. So we're likely to have at least that many left to go. And every day we're just kind of reassessing the situation and making a new plan of attack for the next day.
Now, of course, if this was exclusively an archaeological site, you'd have more time to work as diligently as need be. But there are commercial and financial pressures. Is that why we're here on a snowy day?
That is why we're here on a snowy day. I mean, I would love nothing more than to be able to work for months and months and really get every last piece of information and data out of the ground. But as you say, we're working with many different constraints. So we're out here, regardless of the weather, regardless of the temperature, trying to do the best that we can.
And what does that mean? What will be happening with the bodies? What kind of analysis will you be doing? And then what's the ultimate fate of the remains?
What we're trying to do is get the coffins out intact and take them off-site. Once they're off-site, then we have all the time in the world. And we can really make sure that we do the best job internally excavating each coffin. And once we have all the remains out, then we're going to be doing an analysis where we document them, we clean them up, and we construct what's called the biological profile, where we work out the sex of the individual, the age at death, and then any other information that the bones can tell us about their lifestyle.
This must be quite a treasure trove for a forensic archaeologist. Are there potentially many sites like this still to be discovered in Old City, Philadelphia?
Yes, I'm sure that there are. You know, it's been a pleasure working with this construction company because they're not legally obliged to do any of this. So there perhaps are instances where other sorts of treasure troves have been found, but no one has been the wiser. So we're really fortunate that they did reach out to try to make sure that we can get some information from this site before it's removed.
And my understanding is this is also a collaborative with the Mütter Institute.
Yes, the Mütter Institute is the research arm of the Mütter Museum, and they really have a large network of professionals that they work with to do these kind of multidisciplinary projects. So they're really kind of heading up the team and providing us with a lot of resources.
What's the ultimate fate of the bodies once you've gleaned all the information you can from them?
Well, the ultimate fate is to reinter them as respectfully as possible, ideally at Mount Moriah Cemetery, where the rest of the First Baptist Church Cemetery is located. But that will have to be determined once we actually know how many people we're dealing with and how much space is available.
Partnering with the Mütter Institute, I'm sure the Historical Society is also very interested in this work.
When we first started finding whole coffins, we reached out to a number of different organizations because this is not something that normally happens, and we really wanted to seek as much guidance and advice as we possibly could. We haven't really gotten anything particularly helpful, but we very much want to engage with the archaeological community and the Historical Society here in Philadelphia to try to make sure that, you know, what we're doing is the right thing and that we can, again, kind of pull in resources to find out as much information as possible about this.
Expand on the term the right thing.
We want to be respectful to the individuals. We want to tell their story. We want to make sure that we get as much data out of the project as we possibly can, that we document things properly. So those are the things we're trying to achieve.
Professor, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you so much, Dave. It was a pleasure.
Kimberly Moran, Associate Teaching Professor and Director of the Forensic Center at Rutgers Camden. One week from today is Match Day, when tens of thousands of aspiring doctors find out where they've been matched for a medical residency. All U.S. doctors go through this, and it's an incredibly competitive process. WHYY's Alana Gordon reports that President Donald Trump's executive orders on immigration have complicated the situation for doctors in training who come from countries affected by the travel ban.
About 40,000 students apply for medical residency in the U.S. each year, for just 30,000 slots. And for international medical graduates, it's even more competitive. Only about half typically get matched. For the roughly 1,000 applicants from countries like Iran that were included in President Trump's executive order on immigration, the pressure is even worse.
Yeah, it becomes like double stress.
Amin has been in Philly on a research visa working at Jefferson. We're not giving his full name because he's concerned that could affect his chances to match. He got interested in medicine as a kid growing up in Iran. His dad had seizures, and his mom struggled to manage his care.
So I decided to come here to have like better opportunity for like research and clinical educations to hopefully share this information and these skills for the people who need this in the undeveloped countries.
He's hoping to match next week in a neurology residency. For that, he'll need a new visa. He's trying to stay positive, but he worries that he might be even less likely to get matched because of the uncertainty stemming from the first and second executive orders.
When you try so much, it's hard to get to your dream, and all by sudden you feel that there is some issues like an unexpected problem. It's really a bad feeling.
It is a valid concern.
Dr. William Pinsky is president of the Educational Commission for Foreign Medical Graduates. His agency, based here in Philly, certifies all international medical graduates seeking residency in the U.S. It also sponsors visas for a majority of them. He says the executive orders couldn't come at a worse time in the residency match process.
Because that all came out, you know, right before the program directors turned their lists in.
He's hopeful that those who have a visa already, even from one of the countries affected by the executive order, will be able to get their situation worked out. But when the match decisions were made last month, the president had yet to issue his second executive order. And Pinsky says some future visa scenarios are still unclear. As a result,
I surmise and have talked to a few program directors that we're probably going to rank individuals from these countries lower on their preference order than they would have otherwise.
Even programs that rely on foreign medical graduates are uneasy. Dr. Robert Wimmer heads a small pediatric residency program at Einstein Medical Center. He says the program can't afford to accept someone in their new class of 10 who might not be able to start come July because of visa issues.
We're just not willing to take any risk. It creates a hole for us in our program and what we're able to do here in North Philadelphia.
Wimmer also worries about the strain the new executive order is placing on his current residents. Some have canceled travel plans to see family abroad. But for Pinsky and others, there's even bigger concerns about the potential long-term impacts on the healthcare workforce. As it stands, about one quarter of physicians in the U.S. are international. They often fill gaps in care in areas that other doctors might not want to.
The real legitimate downside is that we potentially could be losing qualified people, and there won't be numbers to fill in the positions, so there could be an issue of access to health care as well as the quality situation.
As for Amin, he's trying to stay upbeat. He says he's been encouraged by support from colleagues and his university. He'll find out Monday whether he's been matched. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
The Republican replacement health care plan proposed this week is predictably under attack by Democrats and conservatives. Let's take the public pulse with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
And Frank, let's also factor in official resistance from the American Medical Association, AARP. What does the public want?
Well, that's a good question. We don't have reads yet, and it'll probably be a while before we get specific reads from the public on the Republican plan, because people have to understand it. But there's been a lot of polling on the ACA, and we've talked about it before, and we got a pretty good feel for public opinion in the general arena of Obamacare and what should be done about it. The key to me is that the majority of Americans are willing to go along with or actually want changes in the Affordable Care Act. However, it is a minority, a significant minority, who wanted, quote, repealed, end quote. And that's a real key because Republicans in Congress are trying to say we're changing Obamacare, but they're really leaving parts of it in. So are they repealing it or are they not, and so forth and so on. That's the real key on how it's kind of positioned as far as the average American is concerned.
In its essence, is it safe to say the public does not want to see higher premiums or reduced services?
Well, of course. That's like motherhood and apple pie. Americans would like to have everything. You know, this plan is arcane. You know, there's a lot of movement of paying for this to certain types of refundable tax credits and so on. That's a shift from how Obamacare had it. And Americans probably have a hard time deciphering all of those types of things. But in general, Americans certainly would like to have it all. They would like to have excellent service and pay less than they are now for that service.
Is health care among the top concerns for the public?
It is up there, but certainly not at the top of the list. At the top of the list is dissatisfaction with government, poor leadership. We've seen that before. We're seeing that again right now. That's topping the economy. The economy is the other usual suspect when we look at this most important problem question that we update every month. In fact, the percent who say the economy in general is the nation's top problem is as low as we've seen it in many, many years. And then immigration. A lot of Republicans will spontaneously say immigration is the top problem. But then below that, below the economy and the government and immigration, healthcare comes in probably third or fourth in terms of the major categories of concerns that Americans have.
If there's such a lack of confidence in government and its leaders, how can there be faith in that body executing policy, whether it's immigration or infrastructure or anything?
To me, that's the key concern of our time, the diminished faith in and legitimacy in core institutions in our society, and in particular the government. It's crippling. That's one of the reasons that Donald Trump was elected, of course. He said he's going to drain the swamp and change things as far as government is concerned, but he's part of the apparatus, and now we have the Republicans in Congress trying to change health care, as we've been talking about, and I think it's a real problem for American society today.
Let's turn to the environment. Given perceptions about the economy, now factor in cheap energy prices, the Trump administration is pushing more fossil fuel extraction, opening up federal lands, and relaxing environmental restrictions on energy production. How is that perceived?
Trump is really pushing uphill on this. Americans clearly say that the environment and preserving the environment is more important than increased production of oil, gas, and coal. In fact, worry about energy is the nation's problem, which we track every March, is now as low as we've seen it.
Though there's no accord on how to pay for it, it seems that there's broad consensus for building out infrastructure.
Oh, absolutely. We have tested a lot of the proposals that have been made by the Trump administration. And actually, we tested this when Hillary Clinton was also arguing for a major investment in infrastructure when she was running for president last year. And the data are non-controversial. Americans overwhelmingly say yes to spending. And we mentioned large amounts of money, billions and billions and billions of dollars on improving bridges, tunnels, and roads. Americans say, go for it. They want more money spent on infrastructure.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. The Woodlands Cemetery is the biggest open space near University City in West Philadelphia. It has beautiful and rare trees, and many neighbors use it as a park. Last night, the Woodlands hosted a very unusual funeral. Bland Philly's Catalina Jaramillo reports.
For all things can but little stay, least those that most we love.
And welcome, all of you, to the ceremony. The event, the funeral for the seven giants, or the four...
About 60 neighbors and tree lovers are sitting next to graves, mourning a historic group of trees. They're gathered around what remains of four dead elms, chopped down to 20 feet tall. It's the funeral for the seven giants, seven enormous English elms planted next to each other more than 100 years ago. Beth Palubinski lives near the Woodlands. She gives tours of the cemetery.
People have just been knocked out by the seven giants, and here they are to say farewell, because it means a lot to them.
A couple of years ago, these trees were 90 feet tall and had big horizontal branches that looked like arms. That's why people call them the seven giants. Their shade was perfect on a summer day. Visitors loved to sit under them and listen to the sound of the leaves moving with the wind. They say it felt like a cathedral, a magic spot to escape the city. Tree experts like Ned Barnard also admire them.
Yes, it's a rare thing to see a group of such large, commanding, amazingly impressive English elms. I never saw anything like it anywhere else.
In fact, tree experts believe that this was the last remaining English elm grove in the country. Elms were very common in residential avenues and city parks in the early 1900s. Joel Fry, curator at the botanical park Bartram's Garden, says most of them were destroyed by Dutch elm disease, caused by a fungi and spread by elm bark beetles.
No one really knows why these trees survived for so long when every other big elm in the Philadelphia area, barring maybe a few, maybe 1% have survived, but they all died in the 50s and 60s and early 70s.
In 2013, three of the seven giants got the disease. Jessica Bammert, director of the Woodlands, says they immediately removed them and treated the other four, hoping they wouldn't get infected. They look fairly healthy until last summer.
One of them didn't look so great when it leafed out, and we were pretty confident that it probably had Dutch elm disease. And then as the growing season last summer went on, it slowly just... By the end of the summer, we had four giant... very obviously dead trees in the landscape.
Bomber said she was too sad to make an announcement then. But last week, she decided it was time. She wrote an obituary for the seven giants and announced their death on Facebook. She was surprised by the reaction.
Lots and lots of shares. People, like, tagging other people and saying, like, oh no, remember when we visited these trees 2 years ago, you know.
And because they're a cemetery, they decided to have a tree funeral.
Everyone seems to be liking it, which is great.
There's a cake decorated with the seven giants, a guest book, photos of the trees, and even a memorial card.
Very happy to live in a place where people will have a funeral for it.
I know, right?
Like, I kind of love that, and I'm also sad.
The seven giants are gone, but three new, disease-resistant American elms were planted where the first three were. And at the funeral, tree experts discover a new tree growing from a root of an original elm. Baumart is optimistic, but also realistic.
I'll be long dead before these trees reach anything even close to the Grove of Seven Giants.
We'll just have to wait another 100 years. For WHYY's Plant Philly, I'm Catalina Jaramillo.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. At the helm this week, Diana Martinez and Adam Staniszewski. Sandra Clark is Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. John Musoni is Assistant Vice President for News Operations. Our News Director is Eugene Son. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.